And here's Adley Simon busting it. He's in the midfield. 50, 45, 40. He could score. 25, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Adley Simon! That, my friends, is a 75-yard U of R Rams touchdown!
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in his province, growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Hey fans, Growing the Game with Ballsy brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan and the Concord Group of Companies. Thanks to David Dubé for stepping up once again and supporting this podcast and by extension, local football here in the province. Mark Greshner Photography, award-winning photographer. You can check out some of his work on my Facebook page as he's done some work recently for me and my kid's grad. Great, great work. MarkGreshner.com. I highly recommend him. Riviere Ag Seeds out there in Radville. Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified Durham yellow peas and chickpeas. Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Give the three-time Grey Cup champ a call if you want to get in the real estate game, 306-502-5355. Corey Zadorozniak at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain marketing, grain hauling, and crop insurance, give Double Z Ag Sales a call and Corey will treat you right. SAS Selects Football and Zelko Stefanovic. We heard from him on a recent podcast. He is supporting the young athletes trying to cut their teeth in the game of football out there at the R Center and Moose Jaw Building, the Stars of Tomorrow today. And also Boys Next Door Window Cleaning, Nathan and Landon. They'll pressure wash, they'll gutter clean, but their specialty is cleaning windows. Make sure you check out their website, theboysnextdoor.ca. Now, I know this isn't football related, but I found this very interesting. Have you ever wondered how much some of Major League Baseball's biggest legends like Babe Ruth, Cy Young, Hank Aaron, or Mickey Mantle would be raking in if they were playing today? Well, some researchers did, and rather than simply multiplying for inflation, they compared the old schoolers to a similar current player and then projecting a salary based on how their stats and productivity stacked up. Here's what they came up with. A couple of examples for you. Babe Ruth's 1930-31 salary, $80,000. When compared to Mookie Betts of the Dodgers, he'd be making $44.4 million in 2020. Walter Johnson's 1914 salary of $17,500. When compared to Gerrit Cole, he'd be making $53.4 million. Willie Mays' 1969-70 salary of $135,000. When compared to Mike Trout of the Angels, he'd be making $33.6 million in 2020. How about Mickey Mantle's 1962 salary of $90,000? When compared to Freddie Freeman, I think he plays for the Braves, he'd be making $24 million in 2020. And Hank Aaron's 1975-76 salary of $240,000, when compared to Christian Yelich, he'd be making about $10.8 million. So some pretty neat comparisons there. Time now to get to our guest. That's Jeff Stusek, who is basically Mr. Football around here, but we're going to talk as it relates to RMF. He's the president of Regina Minor Football. I'll call you Mr. Football. You're tied in with the Riders. You're an assistant coach with the Rams and, of course, taking on the presidency of RMF in a challenging time, a different time. What does RMF look like going forward here right now?
We've just finished our registration on June 30th. We had a deadline. We have 820, I think, players registered for the fall. Len has gone through and set up the teams. So it's looking good. We have 10 Mighty Mike teams, 10 Adam teams, 9 Pee Wee and 8 Bantam teams ready to go. Our plan is to play in the fall. We recognize all of that changes over time. We had a meeting last night to go through the timeline around handing out equipment, which begins shortly, and training our coaches on safe contact and really putting this COVID angle on top of all of this around playing safely and returning to play safely. So I think we're well positioned. All of that can change. All of that continues to evolve, and we'll continue to take direction from the health authorities on this. But our plan is to play.
I know I've been a head coach for a number of years when my son was playing. So if you're a head coach, you get to also hand out the equipment. So you're the equipment manager. What about protocols for that? I mean, it'd be interesting time doing that too. It's not like, you know, before just come to my garage and grab the stuff and we'll fit you. But that might still be the case in terms of where they're going to get the equipment. But how about giving them out?
Yeah, it's a really good point. So what we talked about last night, RMF, what we do is we have a sort of a clothing sale, like the football pants and girdles and those types of things. And so we had to put special protocols in for that. We're going to have to, you know, teach the coaches how to sanitize helmets because, as you know and I know, coaching in that league, you know, a player will try on four different helmets before it's comfortable and sometimes go back to the first one. And you can't just do that willy-nilly through this process. And so we have to educate our coaches on how to hand out equipment properly. We're going to have to educate our parents on how to sort of sanitize them or keep them clean at the end of the day so that they come back at next practice. So, you know, there's a lot of challenges, but they're not – we can overcome them. You know, there are hockey games going on right now and hockey tournaments going on right now. And if they're playing hockey and keeping safe, we can do the same with football.
Yeah, Jeff, so in terms of, I know we talked earlier about that there, you know, there'll be protocols put in place, probably wiping the football down maybe in between possessions and all that type of stuff. In terms of fans, will fans be allowed to watch? Will you have to register? Will there be that type of stuff?
You know, we talked about that as well, and I think we have to take our direction both from the city because it's a city-owned facility, but also from the health authority. I think they're overriding in all of this around how many people could be in the stands. And I know, you know, we stay in contact with the other sports, and baseball's having a challenge because each you're only allowed 30 fans in the crowd, like in the stands. And so we're going to have to work through those challenges. Now our facility is big. We could spread out over the berms. We can do a lot of things, and we want to work directly with the health authority to help with that and the city of Regina with that. So we're not in a position to say this is how it's going to be because it evolves. We're just warning folks that it's not going to be normal, and we don't know what that means, and I don't think anyone knows. The WHL doesn't know what that means. The RMF doesn't know what that means. But we're going to have to do something along those lines that limit participation or sanitize that. What we've decided as a board, though, is we're not fundamentally shifting the game of football. So we're not turning tackle football into flag football. Not there's anything wrong with flag. It's just not tackle football. And if we can't huddle or if the linemen have to have 6-foot splits, well, it's not football as we know
there's
it.
There's no point in doing it.
It makes sense. That's right. And if we have to do all of those things, then we're just going to have to say no season this year. But I don't want, and the board does not want, to sort of lose the optimism and in some ways realism that we want to play and we want to get a season going, and there's a mental health aspect. You've touched on it in your podcast before. There's a mental health aspect for our players to be playing football and our families to be involved in it. And to lose that in the fall will be tough. And so I want to make sure we're doing everything we can to try to make it go.
Yeah, especially kids that don't play hockey and they're into football now, and it can become a long winter. So you want to try to get some, you know, late summer, early fall activity, like, because it could be another long year. You're absolutely right, Jeff Stutzik. Very, very good point. A couple more logistics things just for the average listener. So I know I talked to flag football. They make you wear gloves now. Gloves is kind of trendy amongst kids. Some don't like to wear them. Are you going to make kids wear gloves? And how about like for coaches and stuff, masks or referees masks or anything like that?
The plan right now is no on those cases as far as forcing. There's still conversations with the officials about how that's going to go. Right now, our plan is not to have coaches in masks or PPE and those types of things. You know, we have looked, and you've seen some of the reports of the NFL, we have actually looked at some face shield, you know, type things that are coming out. The Under Armour has a product. I think Shot has a product.
Oakley.
Shielding.
Yeah.
But, as a coach, I that would be really hard for a player to sort of get air and oxygen and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's going to work. But, you know, I'm not saying that's a no. It's just we're investigating all of those things. It's a very, very busy time right now for Len and Kelly and the crew, just going through what options are available. You know, our job as a board to sort of give guidance and direction, and Len and Kelly and team sort of work through that. And like I said at the meeting last night, we decided we are going to continue to proceed with our play and with some of the principles that if it's not looking like football anymore, then that's not worth it. And but we are going to take some extra care and attention. And so there's obvious things about, you know, sanitizing equipment and, you know, silly things like not sharing water bottles, of course, you know, no spitting and no, like all of that stuff that is seems table stakes for all of us. But, you know, we're going to have to remind everybody of all those things all over again. Now, football is a, you know, has a challenge because it's a contact sport, but at the same time, it has a unique advantage because, you know, our players typically show up at practice dressed and they go home dressed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't have locker rooms. We're not going to open the locker rooms at Libel this year, unless it's an emergency like lightning or something, but the locker rooms will be closed. And so we're not going to have those types of logistical issues. We're not going to get on buses and those types of things. But at the same time, it's a contact sport, and the health authority needs to, you know, be clear and explicit about, you know, what they expect from us there.
Okay, so you're very wrapped into all levels of football. I'm thankful, yet, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm thankful, yet a little disturbed that my son has to go down to the United States in a pandemic and all this stuff by himself, has to quarantine for 2 weeks. As a parent, it's a little disturbing, a little unnerving. But I'm also thankful that he got through his grade 12 football year, got that extra tape, and got the exposure that he was allowed to get. I feel bad for kids that wouldn't get a chance to play their grade 12 year. Do you think we'll have grade 12 football? I guess if you think we're going to have RMF, you probably think we're going to have grade 12 football.
I do think we're going to have high school football. I do think we're going to have high school football, full stop. I also think we're going to have high school football in the fall. And, you know, the FIFA I've talked to have plans in place, and they are ready to go. Now, the challenge with high school football, as you know, there are two levels of authority that need to happen. There's the school boards have to authorize it, and the SAA has to sort of authorize it, and that also the health authority has the overriding. So something could trip up along those ways. The school boards could make a different decision. If that happens in the fall, there is a potential that they could play spring football. Less likely, but there is a potential that they have a window there to play spring, which would have impact on things like, for us, like spring league and those types of stuff. But I really want, and as you know, I really would love every kid that wants to play high school football to have that opportunity. And if you're in grade 12, that would be very challenging and tragic to not play. And, you know, we're seeing the impact that COVID's had, like at youth sports level, and the age out thing that's an ongoing issue. If the PFC doesn't play, as I've told you, I have a 22-year-old son who is in his fifth year, and if PFC doesn't play and they don't add an age exemption, this is his last, he just played his last year, unknowingly. And that's a terrible way to end your football career, and I don't want that for anyone. So I know, and I've talked to the commissioner here, and they're planning to play. And so they've got all their plans, and he's confident they're going to play, and that's the plan. And he recognizes the decisions are going to happen above him. But he thinks they have a good plan ready to go.
Hey, you walked me down the last question. I'm glad you brought it up. So it's interesting for you because you've got a son you just alluded to that's about to play his last game in junior football, maybe if they you know, if they cancel it, and you've got another up and coming son as a great young receiver with the Rams. How do you feel about the age out? It is a complicated decision. Dick White was on this podcast, and I thought he did a pretty good job trying to outline it, but you know. His reasoning was we didn't want to open Pandora's box, but I think if parents or whoever gets together and challenges this in court, that's going to be thrown out. It's the only sport in U Sports level and I'm speaking of that specifically, where it's age cap. Wrestling isn't, hockey isn't. And I don't think, I mean, couldn't they sit together in a room and say, listen, our coaches and those people on the subcommittee want this, so can we not just for 1 year make it 20, like make it 26. That's it. Don't make it 29 and let everybody know that it's just a 1 year deal.
Yeah. You know, it's tricky. My perspective is this, Michael. One is I really respect what Chris Morris, head coach of U of A, and his role as president of CUFCA, the head of the coaches group, what he's doing to stand up for what's right. And it was a unanimous recommendation to U Sports. I give Dick White, I listened to your podcast with Dick, and I give him a lot of credit for coming on that day to answer the questions. My personal perspective is if someone's going to challenge it, they're going to challenge it anyway. And so let's do the right thing. We were essentially shutting out 300 kids that worked so hard and were for no fault of their own. They're going to lose their last season. That just doesn't sit well with me. And it doesn't sit well that it's because of a potential future lawsuit, if that lawsuit could happen anyway, and do the right thing. And if they did the right thing and extended it and then be prepared to fight if the age cap still needs to be in place, which I think the coaches generally think there should be some sort of age cap. And I actually agree with that because I don't agree with the 35-year-old fullback out of University of Manitoba playing or a 28-year-old tailback that, you know, they win a Vanier, and that's no criticism. That was the rules at the time they could do it. But I don't think that's right. A 31-year-old receiver playing an 18-year-old DB does not make sense to me. But a 26-year-old versus a 18-year-old, I don't see that. That's not an issue. It doesn't seem to be an issue in hockey. It's not an issue in rugby. It's not an issue in wrestling. And I'd say in wrestling, that'd be way worse. Mm-hmm. And that's just an opinion. I think there's going to be a challenge either way. I actually think that they've just sort of shone a light on it. So do the right thing. Move the age for a year, say it's COVID, and be prepared to defend the age cap after that. And that's what the organization should do.
It's something that I'm glad you said that, and I'll just wrap it up. You guys at the board level there at the RMF, you made a decision to go for it, and what I liked about what you said is, if it isn't football, we're not playing it. You made a decision. In this world, I'm finding a lot of people don't want to make decisions. Let's let the courts decide. Let's let somebody else take it off our plate. Let's not stand up and make a decision. Make a decision. Right. Make a decision. You're not going to please everybody, but I think people, if you sat down and said, this is the way it is, it's a pandemic, this doesn't happen every year, we're doing it, and then we're going back, end of discussion, and the coaches wanted it. I mean, they created more of a mess, I think, than they needed to. But Jeff, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for this, and we'll stay in touch. Hopefully things go well at the RMF level.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate all that you do as well. So.
Just before I wrap up this installment of Growing the Game with Ballsy, I want to promote the next installment. We're going to hear from Dick White, the interim CEO and president of U Sports, as they have circled back and they're looking at reviewing their controversial decision of stripping fourth-year players of their last year of eligibility on the other side of the pandemic. That would be football players. So we'll talk to him about that. And I'll talk to one of those football players in jeopardy of losing his last year of eligibility, the quarterback at the University of Calgary Dinos, Josiah Joseph, who is, from a player standpoint, spearheading maybe some legal action against U Sports. So stay tuned for that. And just before I wrap up, are you looking for exciting sports action these days? Of course you are. Well, look no further than all the delivery drivers speeding through your neighborhood.
Get ready for the Food Delivery Summer Nationals. It's not at a raceway. It's on the streets where you live. And coming around the first turn, it's the guy driving for Uber Eats. But wait, DoorDash just raced through the yellow light. And there's Grubhub taking a corner on two wheels. Ooh, and Domino's almost crashed into Jimmy John's as Postmates peels out of the intersection. Don't miss the most amazing car maneuvers and death-defying stunts. All so you don't have to leave the house. The Food Delivery Summer Nationals, happening this weekend in traffic near you. Be there!
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.